This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So Batman.
I'll tell you.
Hard Fred, Jeff.
But I'll tell you the thing about Batman, and I mean this sincerely. The main reason why I'm not going to say anything is because Chris doesn't want me to say anything. So.
The thing that struck me about this movie, which I really like, by the way.
Cool.
Is that it?
You're definitely the target audience for this movie.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm not the target audience for the movie. No, if you liked it, I think that's great, because obviously the target audience is sort of 16.
Fat middle-aged journalists.
Yeah, 16 to 24-year-olds.
So I was looking at this, and I thought, this is not what I was expecting, because this is not a Goya-type movie.
Good.
What drew you to it, and you see it as being an atypical of your work?
Well, I think to the extent that the public is aware of me, they will think it's atypical, for sure. I mean, if you look at Batman Begins or the Blade movies or Dark City or any of that stuff, they'll think, what the hell? But in terms of the movies that I watch or the books that I read or things like that, I mean, I'm sure you have varied interests, you know, as do I, and so I don't think it's atypical for me.
This is based on a novel, right?
It's based on a novel, a Swedish novel, that has never been translated, that was then made into a Swedish film that was not released here.
When did you see it?
I saw a bootleg tape of it about 3 years ago. I know, yeah, a pirated videotape.
Wow.
And through a friend of a friend, and I loved the movie. I thought it was, I didn't know, I thought it was going to go a certain way. In fact, at first I kind of rolled my eyes when I was watching the film 20 minutes in, and I was like, oh, I know where it's going. And then it didn't go that way. And then there was another point in the film where I said, oh, I know where it's going. And then it didn't go that way. And I just kept watching and watching, and I really liked it. And I really liked that it was, and I mean this in a good way, very European. It didn't follow Hollywood conventions. So when I found out that Spyglass wanted to remake the film, you know, I kind of chased it down. They were surprised that I wanted to do it. But I argued very passionately to do it and convince them.
Are there any Goyerisms in the film?
Well, the only Goyerism is that the... in the garage scene, the character of Marcus is an auto mechanic, and when he gets a call from Annie, if you look in the background, the Blade car, they're working on the Blade car behind it.
Oh, that's very funny.
Yeah.
This like a blocking nightmare? Because you have stuff breaking and coming back in the same scene, actors who have to not acknowledge an actor who's right there with them.
I had no idea until we started filming how complicated it was going to be. I thought, oh, this is going to be a nice little kind of melodrama, you know, but once you realize, you know, because we did our first scene, and you have to have, nobody can interact with the lead character, but no one can make eye contact with them, and especially when you're dealing with scenes sometimes where you've got 50 or 60 extras, and you realize, and, you know, and takes would be ruined because that person was looking at him, or that, you know, things like that. Then after a few days, I realized, oh my God, this is actually really complicated, you know. And plus, we did all sorts of kind of in-camera trickery. I didn't want to do a lot of overt visual effects where he phases through walls or he looks like a specter or anything like that. But we did a lot of in-camera trickery where he's, you know, with motion control and things like that, where he's, you know, on one side of the room, and then the camera moves over, and there he is on the other side of the room, and obviously, he kind of broke the laws of physics to get there, but we didn't show it. So, yes, it was, you know, there's a scene in the movie where he gets angry at his mom and he throws the chair through the window, you know, and we pan back to him and pan back to the window all in one shot, and it's all, the window's not broken. We did a number of things like that.
So did the Swedish version have tricks like that? I mean, could they be as complicated?
The Swedish version didn't do anything in camera like that. You know, it was all in cuts, but I thought that was kind of fun. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, the first 3 minutes of the movie are all one shot, which is most audience members don't notice, but...
Well, we do.
That was funny.
As a writer, then, are you a... How much, to what extent are you a slave to other people's scripts? I mean, when you're working with other writers, is your perception as a filmmaker very different because you're a writer yourself and you've seen other directors either hack up or not the work that you've written?
I think being a writer myself, I was more open-minded and sympathetic to listening, you know, to what the writers had to say, because I've had the experience of having, you know, my scripts get ruined. And I think the best scenario, you know, when I worked with Guillermo del Toro or Chris Nolan or people like that, we would have a healthy but combative relationship, which I think is good, you know, which that's why Chris brought me on to Batman, was so that, you know, he could have somebody to argue with, and out of that would come the best material. So I really encourage that, you know, with the writers on this. And, you know, I'm developing a number of things to direct that I'm not the writer on as well. I like that interchange. I think that's really good.
I know you can't talk about the story of the new Batman, however, and I won't ask, but I'm curious about the relationship you have with Chris and what it was like with this new movie.
Well, the relationship was the same as the first one. We have it's just a great sense of mutual respect. All bets are, you know, we argue ferociously about things, and it's knockdown, drag out fights about things, but it's good. I mean, we sit there, and when we're working, you know, in his office or wherever we are, and, you know, we just go back and forth and challenge each other, and then, you know, the best idea wins.
How hard is it for you to better yourself when you're doing a sequel like this? I mean, when there are so many expectations, when you've got fans and comic book fanatics and all that kind of stuff. I mean,
it's an enormous burden, and something that you know, we think about all the time.
And you're obviously conscious of that while you're writing.
Sure,
this script, right?
Sure. It's scary. So they're scary because you get to a certain point and you know, I consider myself a fan as well. But even to the extent that I wanted to do with The Invisible, I wanted to do, it's not a shot-for-shot remake, but I really liked the original film. I wanted to do it justice. I didn't want to hack it out kind of thing. And, you know, the American audiences don't know, they probably will never see the original film, but I really liked it. Or if I'm working on, you know, an adaptation of, you know, a book or, a comic book that I really like. I mean, I consider myself a fan just like a lot of the audiences, so I don't want to let them down.
What's going on with Green Arrow?
It's being written. I mean, I wish I had a more interesting answer than that. It was just that the writer started working like a week ago.
It's called Supermax.
Yeah. And that's a working title, yeah.
And then what happened to The Flash? Because you were talking about that with us for a long time.
Look, The Flash was just one of those... It's so funny because it ended up happening the same day as Joss Whedon on Wonder Woman. We ended up about a week later or 2 weeks later having lunch together, Joss and I. But, you know, fortunately, I'm in a place in my career where I can pick and choose what I want to do. And I reached a point... You know, when you start out, you just want to get a job or you just want to get your movie made or things like that. But I reached a point, I don't know how many years ago, where if I got a set of notes that I really didn't believe in, I wouldn't do them. So then it's either I walk or I don't walk or something like that. And The Flash, you know, I still have a great relationship with Warner Brothers. I turned around a month later and sold them Supermax. It just became apparent that we wanted to do two different stories. And I just said, well...
You find it frustrating then working with studios? I mean, does that get, because you are such an auteur, I guess.
I mean, it can be frustrating, but the blessing and the curse of working with like library characters like that, you know, you don't own them. I mean, I have a number of original projects that I'm working on as well, but if it's a library character, if it's Batman, if it's Superman, if it's whomever, I mean, you don't own those characters. So
you're a slave to what was there or already exists, right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask, but for the people who enjoy your work, could you tell them what you're working on, what your schedule is like for the next, say, year? You know, what's on your plate?
I wish I could I don't know what... I will be directing something in the fall. I don't know which one it will be yet.
Is there choices that you could tell us?
No.
Is it original material or library material? As you...
He's sorting it out.
There's actually both, so I don't... I'm not being coy. Like, I really don't... Like, there's a couple of balls in the air right now that'll land in the next month or so.
I guess...
Right now, I'm writing a remake of Scanners. I'm not directing that.
For Dimension.
And I'm unfortunately for me, but unfortunately for you, I'm working on a couple of secret projects that I can't talk about.
How faithful are you going to be to the original Scanners?
Well, see, that's an example. You asked about fans and things like that. Cronenberg is absolutely one of my favorite
filmmakers. I love the original.
Filmmakers. I love the original.
You don't screw it up then, right?
Well, I hope not. Interestingly enough, with Scanners, Scanners is a great movie, but it's also very dated to a certain extent. And largely, I'm saying in kind of socio-political terms, it's very dated. And Cronenberg's movies are always very political
and very specific. Right.
And that original film, had a lot to do, with corporate America and the Reagan years, and all of that stuff. And that's not what's happening now, So my whole thing was, and I love that movie, and I don't want to ruin that movie. So it's not a slavish remake. It's kind of taking the best stuff from that and trying to apply the same socio-political template. So what I mean by that is, you take the existence of Scanners, and then you pick up the newspaper right now and read about all the stuff that's going on in Iraq, or all the stuff that's going on with the Justice Department, or with Guantanamo Bay, and all the rights that are being
trampled
on.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to deal with in the remake of that. And like, what
is David giving you the blessing? Have you spoken to David about it at all?
I haven't yet. I figured the best way to do it would be finish it and send it to him, and either get his blessing or take my lashings.
I think a lot of us would have liked to see your version of Ghost Rider. Do you have any feelings about how that came out and what your version might have been?
Well, my version, which Steve Norrington was going to direct, was a completely different movie. I mean, I think Nick Cage said, and Nick Cage was attached to both. I mean, our version was The Haunted Mansion, and his version is Pirates, Mark Steven Johnson's is Pirates of the Caribbean. Ours was a super hard R, and it was a horror film, just an outright horror film.
The drinking, smoking.
Yeah, I mean, it was harder than Blade. It was really hard. And so that would have been really fun. Would that have been as successful at the box office? Probably not.
Do you think that the studios aren't willing to take those kinds of risks, and does that concern you as a
is that frustrating when something, forget whether you were attached or not, when something like that, does that change the way you're asked to write things?
Well,
and stuff, they go soft on it. And
yes and no, because it's kind of cyclical, because, that happens, and then 300 comes out and is going to do $500 million worldwide, and that was, pretty hard R. And now everyone's attitude in Hollywood is, oh, I guess that works. The cool thing about Scanners is, Bob Weinstein said, don't hold back. I mean, just, it's hard art.
He's Bob Weinstein.
Yeah,
he
but that's fun.
He loves it.
And so with Scanners, it's just fun to know I can just go for it, and I don't have to do the toned-down version of it.
So you're still going to blow up ahead.
Of course we're going to blow up ahead, But we have to go further than blow up ahead, because, we're 20 years down the line.
So is there I'm just going to have to ask, but are there any superhero characters that you're, in the back of your mind, you're like, wow, I'd really like to take a crack at that, especially being able to do a hard R with the success of 300?
Well, I can say something because it's a wannabe. I would love one day to do a Doctor Strange, an R-rated Doctor Strange, but who knows? Whatever.
Maybe that'll happen.
Yeah. Most of the ones that I've worked on, most of the ones I've done, I had an opportunity already to work on quite a few, so I'm pretty sated in that regard.
And so what is it like for you? I mean, you're very busy and you're writing all the time. I mean, does your work, do you just have like a 9-to-5 kind of day, or how do you write?
I'm very regimented. I'll write one thing from 9 to 11, and I'll switch gears and I'll write something else from 11 to 1, and then in the afternoon I'll do, whether it's this, I'll do non-writing. So, you know, whether it's editing, whether it's depending on what, obviously I'm not writing when I'm shooting something, but, you know, all the writing stuff happens from 9 to 1, and then all the non-writing stuff happens from, you know, 1 to 6 or whatever.
Do you find that you're more creative in the morning and that's why you came up with the schedule?
I'm a creature of habit, and that's just the way that worked for me and the way I've been doing it for 18 years. And so now it's very regimented and very, like, I'm always by 9, I'm behind the computer, and I always finish by 1. And I found that it works best for me to create a very specific discipline and just stick to it like it's a real job.
And what challenges are there for you now as a writer and director? Do you find that tough to be as creative now as you were when you started? I mean, what kinds of things really challenge you?
Well, one of the reasons why I started directing was just because that was an opportunity to, you know, learn and grow and do something different. I mean, I really, really, really like editing, for instance. And, you know, I've been fortunate as a writer to have been close to a lot of the directors I work with and be in the editing room. But editing is really filmmaking. I mean, that's really what...
That's the essence of filmmaking.
Yeah, it really is. And I love editing, and it never ceases to amaze me how you can completely change a scene around, or you can pull a close-up from a completely different scene. And, you know, it's Eisenstein. It's all of that stuff. And I'm just endlessly fascinated by editing. I find that's the part that I really enjoy.
How do you feel about your TV experience? Would you try launching any more TV projects?
Yes, and you're going to be reading about one in a few weeks.
Okay. How about the ones that is Blade still on, or is that
Blade's unfortunately not still on? It will come out on DVD. I mean, my TV experience has been somewhat frustrating because usually, to the extent that I've done TV, it's kind of too edgy for TV, you know, or doesn't fit in the typical television box. But, you know, I'll keep trying. I mean, I had a good experience with, even though it was short-lived, the pilot of Threshold. I was really proud of that. For some reason, people don't know that I directed that, but I did. But that was really fun. And it was fun. It's fun working in television because the pace is so different from features. I liken it to the difference between oil painting and watercolor. You've got to move so quickly in television, but I think that's fun.
I was just going to say, how is it for you as a creator to be recognized by fans when you're not in front of the camera?
That's weird, and it's something that's emerged over the last couple of years, and now, if I'm out in public, there's not a day that goes by where somebody that's been weird, that's been strange. Because I think the real thing that did it, well, obviously it was the internet, but it was also DVD extras, because people would never necessarily know what I looked like. But once you do these behind the scenes and things like that, that's kind of weird.
So no Comic-Con for you walking on the convention floor?
No, I do that. But every once in a while, I'll be in a situation where somebody will come up to me in a restaurant or something, and you're just always worried that, like, you just never know what's going to happen. You know, I was actually talking about that with Christian Bailey the other night, because we were like, because sometimes you'll just bump into somebody on the street and they'll, you know, it's always been good so far, so.
And that story of Batman again is what? Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
I'm sorry?
The story of Batman again, what was that again?
Oh, yeah.